G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 1A.
So, the subject of this week is the model of being and its laws. The model of being is a long term. We usually called it just in an abbreviated way the chart. So if I say the chart or the model of being, you know I mean the same thing. The one is an abbreviation. Now, what is going on in the world? As I said last time at the end of the summer school, I feel that those 40-year periods are over. The first 40 years period where Mrs. Eddy within 40 years had the revelation of Christian Science and defined that revelation in her textbook and laid it down. Then it took another 40 years from around about 1910 to 1950 when John Dawley showed us what that revelation really is. So he spelled out the revelation in its scientific terms. Then we felt that after John Dawley left us in 1950, that we had another 40 years where we tried, or where I tried mostly, to show the method of how to investigate that scientific sense of Christian Science. So my accentuation within the last 40 years was actually always on method, so as to show the student how he can get hold of the science himself if I show him the method of what this science implies. Then we said, after this, now the 40 years are over, 1950 towards 1990, and one feels that we have shown that method and that something else is ready to be seen, and this is what I feel to show, that Christian Science is the world, that Christian Science is the science of all sciences and has to do with the whole world, and not just with a religion called Christian Science. This has become even more important because, you know, the world goes through a terrific evolution leap, so to say, that suddenly the world is waking up to the fact that we have only one world. Up to this period, people were thinking, well, all that matters was way back the family, then the tribe, then perhaps the nation, the kingdom. And so little by little, only in a step-by-step way, the realm of the concern got bigger and bigger geographically, until now, after World War II, more and more one began to see that the world is one world. And if we see that the world is one world, we naturally also have to adapt our consciousness to that one world thinking, so that it demands a quite different structure of consciousness in order to understand parts of this one world. And this is the subject that will underlie the whole week's work, namely that we see we are living in one world, but that one world everybody knows today is in bad shape. And if the world is in bad shape, the individual is in bad shape. The individual cannot be in good shape if the whole, that which is bigger than the smaller, if the bigger is not in good shape. So it is no use to try to work out one's own individual life without working out the bigger issue, that of the one world. So the problems which we have today go into dozens, and all these problems that the world has seem to be insoluble, unsolvable, either one or the other. It seems that we cannot deal with those fundamental problems in the world. And this must have a reason. This must have a deep-rooted reason. And what is that deep-rooted reason? Well, the moralists and the ethical people say, well, people should be better, people should be good. But that doesn't change the world, as we will see. That is not the answer. The answer lies much deeper, namely, because the world as we have it today has a false concept of science. Well, this is a quite a different answer than an ethical answer or a moral answer to say, well, what is missing is really that we have a wrong concept of science. And the historians of today already prophesy that when we look back, say in 100 or 200 years, look back on the last three centuries, that they will speak of those last three centuries as the dark ages of science, not as those centuries which have brought us a lot of success and progress. We thought that natural science would bring us the paradise, that they will be able to solve everything, and that we will live in a paradise. And in the world we live in doesn't look like paradise. And everybody knows it today, and that's a good thing that now finally everybody knows that something is fundamentally very wrong. So it is nothing like the enlightenment that was hoped for in the last centuries. We are really in a dark age of science, which is a different age than the dark ages of the Middle Ages. So what is then wrong about the whole concept of science? Well, we are Christian scientists, and therefore we call ourselves scientists. But the question is, are we actually scientists, or do we only call ourselves Christian scientists? And when I ask this question, do we really are Christian scientists, I would like to put the stress on scientists. Are we really scientists? Or are we just religionists? Are we just trying to be good people? Or are we just trying to be good metaphysicians? Or are we actually scientists? Which brings the other question, have Christian scientists asked at all, ever at all, what means science? What science means? What are the criteria of a science? What are the criteria of a science? Has any Christian scientist asked himself this question? He proudly says, I'm a scientist, but he doesn't know what a science implies. What are the scientific criteria of a science? This is a question which we have to ask before we say we are scientists or even Christian scientists. That implies much more. So we will have to see what the scientific criteria of a modern science are and investigate that. We only know something. That Mrs. Eddy says, for instance, that science is revolutionary in its very nature. That means that science is not something static, that science is not defined once and for all. And therefore we have not a definition of science which is valid for centuries and centuries and centuries. Science is revolutionary. It changes constantly. It finds constantly new criteria, finds out constantly that some of the criteria that science has adopted are wrong, and not good, and not right. And this is what is happening during this century in a very high degree. So it turns out, and this is perhaps for all of us a little shock, that the science that we have accepted as being science over the last 300 centuries turns out to be absolutely unscientific. And this is the shock. And this is a shock that forward thinkers of today begin to realize. And this is what Mrs. Eddy 100 years ago already began to realize, that she had a completely different concept of science and that she had completely different criteria of science than we have today in the general scientific field. So what was called classical science today must be viewed as being for a large extent unscientific, and therefore we need a new concept of science, a concept of science that is quite different than the old concept of science. So what I'm going to do is first to show very quickly, even I would say in a bit superficial way, but enough just for our audience, to show what constituted the old story of science. The cultural historians call it the old story of science, that science which it was the science of the 17th, 18th and 19th century, the classical science. They call it the old story of science, against the new story of science, that science which began to come into consciousness at the beginning of the century. So, in the future, I may call, just so that we understand each other, that concept of science which was dominant in the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th century, I call it the old science, and that science which emerges now in the 20th century, I will call the new science, so that we understand each other. Now, I will present this without any relevance to Christian science. So be patient with me and don't blame me if for 2 or 3 hours I'm going to tell you about the old science and the new science without any reference to Christian science. But I must lay the foundation work so that then, when I've shown that, then we will consider in how far Christian science is adequate for the new science, or how new science is actually the basic groundwork of Christian science, and so see if what Mrs. Eddy has presented is a science that really belongs to the new science, though she has discovered it in the last century and was still living in the old science world. Then when we have compared the new science with the fundamentals of Christian science, then I have given, so to say, the nest in which we can lay the chart. I have given the necessary surrounding, the necessary framework within which we can investigate the model of being. And that is what I want to do. You see, when I gave for the first time in English or in America the model of being, that was in the year 1973 in that memorable summer school in New York, 39 hours on the model of being. I gave there in 1 week. I don't know how the class survived, but they apparently survived. Most of them are still here. And I can't do it much better than what I did it at that time. But what I can do this week is to show really the nest, I like to call it the nest, in which really the model of being is embedded in, is nested in, so that one sees much clearer what that model of being really wants to teach. And we'll see that it can teach much more than if we consider it without this framework. So that's what we'll do then in the second half of this week. So I would ask you that we approach this whole subject with a very open mind, so to say, with a blank consciousness. That's always the best thing, to forget everything one has learned about the subject and say, I'm absolutely blank, I'm a new page. Nothing is written on that page, and so one can take in the subject with an open thought and not to try to embellish what one already knows. That's always dangerous, just to put the sugar layer on top of the old cake and make it look a bit nicer and sweeter. But let's cook a new cake, right from the start, so to say. So it is quite a stirring and demanding undertaking that we are going to witness, and it demands, therefore, a consciousness that is wide open for something new. On this sheet here, on this handout, you have a table of content of what I'm going to present over the next 2 or 3 days or so, so that you just are able to follow a little bit closer the line of reasoning. Now, the very first thing we have always to keep in mind during the whole week is the fundamental law that we have learned in Christian Science, that consciousness determines our world of experience. Now, this is a law not only of Christian Science, but this is also a law of the new science, as we will see. But we have learned it, and so we know that it is of greatest importance that we are considering the content of a consciousness, of our consciousness, because we only experience that kind of world which we see through our consciousness. That's why the world looks very different to everybody, though it's always the same world. It is consciousness that determines what kind of a world we have and in which we live. So this fundamental law we will have to investigate and analyze, because we always are looking out for reality itself. What is reality itself? Now, if consciousness determines our experience, naturally then our consciousness determines what we think is reality. Not what reality is, but what we believe or think reality is. And therefore, we attribute a lot to reality which reality doesn't have. We attribute to that reality which is the real reality, the reality of reality, so to say, we attribute through our consciousness things which do not belong to reality. And therefore, we have to be well aware that we are conscious that we are not attributing through our consciousness something to the world which does not belong to reality. Well, this is a big question, because we know that the way we think is the way that we is also something that we can change. We have it in our power to change consciousness, and so the question is, how should we change consciousness so that we don't attribute to reality something that does not belong to reality? And therefore we begin to see that the thinker, the observer of reality, is really most important. He plays the most important role in science, and this is new. And we will see what is new. I just quote quickly that well-known modern physicist, David Bohm, who said recently that to know what the thinker, the observer is, he says, is an enormous challenge for the scientist, because he has not been able to approach that subject successfully. So you see what the modern thinker is thinking. He knows that the observer, the thinker, is super important, because it's dependent on him what kind of a world he sees. But he admits that the natural scientists actually don't know anything about the observer. They don't know it, because the old science really challenged the idea that the observer is important. On the contrary, the observer, the subjective thinking, should not be taken into consideration. So what is really that consciousness that sees or tries to see reality? It is as if we are looking through a lens, like Paul said, through glass darkly. We look we naturally should look through a glass that is very light, that is transparent. If we look through a glass darkly, we see the corrupted world. If we could look through a glass clearly, we would see reality. Now, what is that lens through which we look? I like to call it the grid through which we look. That determines what kind of a universe we have. What kind of a grid do we have that orders? You see, a grid orders everything in our consciousness. Through which grid, through which system do we look at the universe? Through which ordered grid, through which ordered sense do we look at the universe? So as to see reality as it is, so that we are not attributing something to reality which is not there. And this is the great question. This is an inquiry that has taken hundreds and hundreds of years, always to find out through which lens should we really look at reality. And we'll spend quite a few hours on that subject. But first of all, naturally, we see that the question would be, what is the right lens, what is the right grid through which we can look, because it must be independent on human conception. The moment we look through human conception, then we have a human world. We have a world that is built through human conception, not through the divine reality. Not that reality which existed long before there were human conceptions. So that we can see that instead of human conceptions, we must have such a pure grid through which we look that nothing human can pass through that grid and so be absolutely pure in its content. So that leads at once, as we know, from time to time I bring in some Christian Science annotation, so that you feel sometime the correspondence. You can see that finally we'll see that that grid must not be human conception, but the divine mind, that we have to see the world through the mind of Christ. Now, that is not so easy. If we look back and investigate how really reality has been revealed or discovered to humans, we can perhaps quote Dunuy, who starts right his big book with the first sentence that he says, well, we really can take that we really can behold reality through two very different channels. The one channel is revelation, divine revelation. The other channel is reason, to take the road of reason. And he says, well, naturally, revelation is only open to very, very few, perhaps 1 in 1,000 years, perhaps 1 in 500 years. That doesn't happen to each one. So that most people must go the way of reason and go the road of reason, which means that it is a slow road, very slow, because reason, human reason, gives way to divine reason only slowly. It is a step-by-step advancement, not the breaking in of the effulgence of light like in Revelation, and that it is a way that takes the method of trial and error, that tries out things and sees how they work or if they don't work. So it is a very insufficient way, but the only way, actually, that is left to the ordinary person who does not know how to have direct divine revelation. So with these concepts in view, where we see that everything depends really on consciousness, we can start out, and I will quickly point out how the concept of science has undergone a paradigm shift lately in this century from the old science to the new science. What is the old science? I give it in a few remarks that are very superficial perhaps, but they pinpoint the main questions for us that are necessary. The old science started right with the Greeks already with the view that there are two worlds that we have to contemplate, two realms, the realms of mind and matter, the inner and the outer world, so to say, and that there are two worlds that have somehow connection or no connection, whatever the period in which these people lived, were answered that way. But real scientific investigation, as we know it today, only started then out really with the Renaissance, with Galileo, then with Descartes, Newton, Bacon, that age, where really the modern science as we know it and as we have learned it in school was founded. And they too had always that question of two realms and tried to find an answer of those two realms and answered it in various ways, mostly as two realms considered as matter and mind, or they called it matter and spirit, whereby spirit really meant mind for us. And they contemplated the universe, the material universe, as like a big machine, and that big machine was working under mechanical laws. So what they really had were parts, material parts, plus movement, and they tried to show the mechanism that existed between parts and movement and what they brought forth. Even the body was considered like such a machine and functioned like a machine. Then Galilei and Newton tried to put these mechanical laws into mathematical laws, so that finally the old scientists regarded actually the nature as that which imaged force, mathematical laws.